тифу. Где-то ночка молодая, слезная, морозная, о, худая, голова тифозная.
Про себя воображает.
Somewhere sweet night is young, starry, frosty, oh, worn out, oh, wasted typhus head. She imagines herself on the pillow dreaming, knowing that she doesn't know, knowing that she doesn't know that she is responsible for everything. That beyond the garden, beyond the river, a nag with a coffin is plodding. There's no need to put me underground. I alone am the storyteller.
Anna
Akhmatova. Tashkent, 1942.
It wasn't the food and the hardships of that kind that were the worst aspects of being in Kishlag. It was actually the insects and also, far more critically, the illnesses.
Maria Tumarkin.
There was a moment when everyone was sick with malaria, including the family doctor, Tamara, and that must have felt like, you know, the end of the world, I imagine, when the doctor of the family is feverish and delirious and it looks like she's not going to make it, you know, who's going to take care of the others if the doctor can't pull through? So it seemed like it was just not going to end well at all. And my mom tells the story, obviously, that her mother told her of Tamara completely delirious, completely not knowing where she was, and the illness deteriorating, and the whole situation looked like there was not going to be any way out of it. They were nailed by this malaria, cornered and trapped, and that was it for them.
Evacuees pose a tremendous burden on the local economy, but people in Tashkent are still very proud of the role that Tashkent played during the war and the welcome that the city and the Republic more broadly offered to evacuees from the front line. So it is really, it is still interestingly a point of pride, I think, for many people in Tashkent, that they were able to welcome so many people and provide them with a home.
The lady that was having was renting that room to us was a very nice lady, I would say.
Alla Pelov.
She lost during the war her husband and two boys, everything she had. And seeing that a child of people who were renting the room was always cold. She couldn't probably stand by and see it, and she invited me to sleep with her at night. And all the winters that were very cold there, very cold, in spite of heat that was there in summer, I was sleeping with her.
We rented accommodation.
Max Perlov.
He actually, it's very nice, was the owner of accommodation, was very nice to us, and we were like one family.
One of the things that makes Tashkent during the war so interesting is it really was, in many ways, a sort of international city, in the sense of there were Russians and Jews and Belarusians and Ukrainians, and this was celebrated in Tashkent. Tashkent was seen to be a sort of symbol of the friendship of peoples, the friendship of nations, which is how the Soviet Union at that time conceived of the relation between different groups. And they were particularly proud to host some of the cultural elite of Russia and Ukraine and elsewhere. Despite the difficult living conditions in Tashkent, there were frequent performances. writers and poets frequently read from their work with one another on the city stages. And this was an interesting opportunity for locals to hear the poetry of Anna Akhmatova, to hear the latest installment of Alexei Tolstoy's play on Ivan the Terrible. And there were also theater performances. The Theater of the Revolution was moved to Tashkent during the war, and so locals in Tashkent and evacuees could see performances of these theaters. There were wonderful, reportedly wonderful performances of the Leningrad Conservatory in the city. And there were also, interestingly, the Jewish State Theater had been evacuated to Tashkent, and they performed a whole series of plays from their repertoire, from their traditional repertoire, but also new plays being written during the war, and some Uzbek plays that they put on to great fanfare in Tashkent. Many intellectuals and artists, writers who found themselves in evacuation were very concerned to somehow contribute to the war effort, despite the fact that they were thousands of kilometers from the front in Tashkent. And even writers like Anna Akhmatova, who had a very difficult relationship with the Soviet regime, her son was in the gulag. Even writers like this, and whose works had not been published for a time, were concerned to somehow contribute to the war effort.
Мужество, courage.
Akhmatova, one of the poems she wrote during the war, a poem entitled Courage, was very well received in Tashkent and elsewhere, and was considered an important part of the sort of patriotic output of writers. Interestingly, Akhmatova also was a regular visitor at some of the hospitals where soldiers were convalescing from the front lines.
Мы знаем, что ныне лежит на весах. We know what lies in balance at this moment and what is happening right now. The hour for courage strikes upon our clocks, and courage will not desert us. We're not frightened by a hail of lead. We're not bitter without a roof overhead. And we will preserve you, Russian speech, mighty Russian word. We will transmit you to our grandchildren, free and pure, and rescued from captivity forever. Anna Akhmatova,
Tashkent,
Tashkent, 1942,
42-м году.
Children made up a substantial proportion of the evacuated population. This in part reflected Soviet evacuation policy, which had designated children as one of the groups that should be evacuated, albeit only from major cities. Many children were traveling on their own or in small groups. They'd been separated from their parents, and one way or another had ended up on the trains heading east. So in Tashkent, the authorities set up a special evacuation center just to deal with children. And so children who arrived at the train station were sent to the Children's Evacuation Center, where they were registered and information about their background was recorded. Many times children traveled with no papers, and they didn't know their last name. The officials tried to record something of the appearance of the children so that should their parents still be alive, there would be some way to locate these children. One of the great challenges that confronted the city was what to do with all of these children who arrived there. Some of them had arrived as part of children's homes, and those were resettled in Tashkent. But what to do with the many children who arrived on their own? Many people thought children would do better in individual homes. And one of the interesting phenomena that occurred in Tashkent was the widespread adoption of evacuee children. A number of individuals came forward volunteering to adopt or bring in evacuee children, at least for the duration of the war and longer if need be. And some of these people were a very modest background. They weren't wealthy families. The political elite also adopted children, and adoptions were, in fact, widespread throughout the Republic. And the available evidence suggests that children were, by and large, taken good care of.
Mm-hmm.
from the time that evacuees arrived in cities like Tashkent, they dreamed of going home. Especially after Soviet success in the Battle of Stalingrad in the beginning of 1943, when the Red Army started liberating cities and towns from German occupation, people started trying to prepare to return home. For many evacuees, it was a journey of mixed emotions. They were returning to a landscape that was, on the one hand, their home, and they saw as familiar. At the same time, they were exposed firsthand, and for the first time, to the real ravages of the war. Many of the cities that evacuees wanted to return to, cities like Kiev, Odessa, Minsk, had been destroyed by the German occupation and then the reconquest of the cities. The housing stock had been terribly depleted. And there were real concerns. If you have hundreds of thousands of people streaming back into the cities, how are we going to provide housing for them? How are we going to accommodate them? People who succeeded in getting back did so because they were seen as crucial to the rebuilding effort or because they had family members serving on the front lines. And they could use that. Their people in the army were able to help families secure permission to return.
When we come back to Kyiv, to a place where we live, we haven't got our place because somebody from the neighbors, they took our room and we stayed outside in the street. But after somebody, they gave us, go inside, you can sleep under the stepladder. It was very, very hard time. My mom, she tried to find some job to get a little bit money for food to feed us. And my sister and I put bucket with the cold water. We went to the market and my sister sell this glass of water for 1 kopeka. It's like 1 cent, maybe less. And when the bucket was empty, we have maybe 1 ruble.
When we come back, place what we used to live, it was demolished because it's a war zone. And government give some money for people whose father or mother die in a war. And on this money, government built for us small house.
My father come back after the war, maybe 6 months. And he find us living under the step ladder. Of course, he went to a special place, Bankomat is called. It's for all people who came after war and have some problem. And what they made for us is return this room. In one kitchen, it was 6 neighbors, 6 room. It was very, very hard because in this 6 room live maybe 30 people.
The difficulties attendant upon return were particularly marked for the Soviet Union's Jewish population. Jews had more difficulty than other ethnic groups securing permission to return. You had to get this official authorization to return, and particularly in cultural institutions, in educational institutes, the lists that were drawn up of people who were given authorization to return did not include the Jewish members. It didn't happen across the board. There were many Jews who did secure permission to return, but it did affect especially the cultural and intellectual strata. And those Jews who did return, once they returned, found this challenge of reclaiming their apartments particularly difficult. Antisemitism had also risen markedly over the period of the war. It had risen partly as a result of the perception that Jews were fleeing and this association that was forged with Jews and cowardice. And of course, this has no grounding. Jews were overrepresented among evacuees, but they were also overrepresented in the army. there was a prevalent perception that Jews had fled. And I think this was fed by Nazi propaganda and by the fact that this was a war that did specifically target Jews. And so Jews had taken heed of this and had fled in larger numbers.
Rebecca Manley. Though Jews made up a tiny fraction of the Soviet population overall, less than 2%, they were a greater proportion of the evacuees.
The official statistics, it's difficult to know how much we can rely on them, but according to official statistics, Jews made up a quarter of the overall evacuee population in the Soviet Union as a whole, but constitute an even more substantial part of the evacuated population in Tashkent, something around two-thirds, I think, of evacuees in Tashkent. Popular anti-Semitism was also fanned in the occupied territories by a few years of occupation of an occupation regime in which anti-Semitic propaganda was very, very pronounced. And so when Jews returned, especially to territory that had been occupied, they weren't welcomed, and there was a tendency to blame Jews for the war and also to sort of denounce them as cowards. And so even if by law they should have been able to return to their apartments, many times they were excluded on the ground by neighbors who decided that they simply wouldn't let the Jews return and were pretty confident that in the courts they might be supported.
Growing up in the former Soviet Union, I heard a lot about evacuation. My grandparents were evacuated during the war, my Russian Jewish grandparents, just to make it clear. A lot of the grandparents of my friends were evacuated. I mean, we knew all about this. So I assumed that there's so much research on that. But when I went back to my books, I realized that there is nothing written.
Anna Sternschus is a Russian-born, Canada-based professor of Yiddish language and diaspora studies.
The majority of my respondents were people who survived the war in Central Asia and Siberia and essentially in the Soviet rear during the war. Some of them escaped on foot. Some of them were evacuated by the Soviet government, but as it turned out, usually not because they were Jewish, but because they worked at the strategic plant.
The scarcity of scholarship on the evacuation reflects in part, I think, the tendency of historians of the Soviet Union to skip over the war. For a long time, I think historians have been interested in the formation of the Soviet Union, and they've seen the 1930s as a critical decade. This is the Stalin era and how the various institutions that came to define the Stalin era were put in place. And so the war was really left to military historians who weren't interested in things like the evacuation and didn't try to relate the war to the broader contours of Soviet history. It's only recently that scholars, I think, have turned to the war and seen it as an important part of Soviet history, something that Russians and people in the Soviet Union always saw it in this light. The evacuation, I think, was partly ignored. And interestingly, it's the one part of the Soviet wartime experience that was also ignored in the Soviet Union itself. For a start, the evacuation raised unwelcome memories about the chaos and the defeats of 1941, because the evacuation was a sign of the unpreparedness, the lack of preparation for the war. And Soviet scholars did not see it as part of the heroic narrative of the war.
We were surrounded from all sides by the stories of the Second World War when we were growing up. So I was growing up in the 70s and early 80s, and at school and in various other ways, there was the real cult of the Second World War. And I certainly witnessed that cult and witnessed that complete and utter oversaturation of the curriculum with the very mythologized version of the Second World War. But interestingly, in all of these endless stories about the Second World War, there was hardly ever any mention of the evacuation, of the history of evacuation, of the impact of evacuation, of the specific stories of people caught up in evacuation. So it's only through my family that I learned about the role played by evacuation, and then from that I started reading and reading and reading and realized the enormity of what happened and how the history of the Second World War, the Soviet portion of it, is also in very profound ways the history of evacuation. I wonder too if the reason why the story of evacuation was so invisible was because it was the story primarily of women and children. And the Second World War was a very masculine endeavor in the way that it was taken up and mythologized and turned into a kind of ideological narrative. And women and children escaping, surviving, making do, performing sort of heroic acts in their own right, but not the capital H heroic. They didn't fit into that narrative. It was the narrative of partisans, it was the narrative of soldiers, it was the narrative of civilians taking on the German troops, but not women and children just trying to survive in the most impossible of circumstances.
The lands of the Soviet East were a sanctuary, an ark of sorts, for many Russians who would otherwise have perished in the Second World War. This is especially so for Soviet Jewish evacuees.
As Jews, if they were to remain in Kiev, and we know what happened to the Jews of Kiev, certainly there is no question in my mind that they would not have survived.
You know, from the first day of the Jews, the German kill, firstly, it was Jewish people, because they think it's not people at all. And if we not run away from Kiev in the barge to Astrakhan, of course we will be killed.
There is no question, I think, certainly in my mind, that our family owes their survival to the fact that they were evacuated.
You've been listening to the Tashkent Ark, the story of the Soviet civilian evacuation during World War II. Thanks to all those who took part in the program, Professor Rebecca Manley, Professor Anna Sternschiss, Dr. Maria Tamarkin, evacuees Ala Kogan-Perlov, Max Perlov, Svetlana Karkin, and Alex Lubitsch, and others who told their evacuation stories to producer Cara Rosehope. Thanks also to the Pushkin Lyceum in Melbourne. And a special thank you to Michelle Andrasenko, whose young voice opened the program. Readings were by Sarah O'Donnell and the sound engineer was Gary Havrillay.